She laughed. "I'm glad to see you're well," she said. "The same for you. What happened after Micklin returned?"
"Nothing most days," she paused. "Those were the good ones, waiting for battle."
She looked off in the direction her mother had gone.
"Tenred took the Fjallion Mountains eventually. It was the only reason we finally were able to leave. Alifon had all of his loyal troops watching us, but we were able to escape during the chaos of the retreat. We walked all the way here without rest. I don't know how I'm still on my feet."
Dezzel took her inside his home in the Crepan colony, and nearly had to force her to lie down so she could sleep.
"You need rest," he told her.
"But there's more I have to tell you." She sat up.
"What?"
"Erwell has to die."
"I know that already."
"Do you?"
She sounded as if she didn't believe him.
"Yes. Beatrix told me of his reward for his service."
Andrea just shook her head.
"I thought about killing him many times. I knew I would die soon after, but I still almost did it. I don't know who's worse, him or Alifon."
Her gaze was cold and harsh.
"I will kill Erwell if it's the only way to stop him."
"Only if I don't do it first."
Adria looked down at her lap for a while. Seeing as how she wasn't ready for sleep, Dezzel asked,
"So now Horton controls the mountains overlooking the academy?"
"Yes."
"Where is your father?"
"At the academy. He stayed behind to keep fighting and leading. There will be a battle, but only Horton knows when."
"I assume that means there's no way for Kiro's army to take back the mountain."
"Not from the southern side, where our army is. And there's no way around without Tenred seeing. It could be days, weeks, or even months before Horthon attacks the academy, and if he takes it, the war is as good as lost."
"Why wouldn't he order his troops to attack it from the Fjallion Mountains?" Dezzel asked.
"Almost every arrow shot down at the academy would be wasted. It's too great a distance to be accurate. Fireballs mostly fizzle out at that range, except if Horthon has a mage with Erbal's power. But there are innocent people at the academy. We hope Horthon won't order his men to shoot fireballs when it's just as likely to kill innocents as it is an enemy soldier, but I guess no one can be sure."
"What about catapults? I assume Horthon has built some by now."
"Yes, both sides have, but it's nearly impossible to get one to the top of the mountains. It might be just as difficult to get a boulder up there to hurl down. There's nothing they can do from the mountains except watch and prepare to attack."
"Have there been any more talks of peace?" Dezzel asked.
"No. Horton refuses to meet with Alifon."
She yawned.
"Sleep," Dezzel told her, "and I'll get you something to eat when you wake up."
"I want to hear everything that has happened here. The Creps may be savages, but they're not boring."
Dezzel chuckled.
"I'll tell you all."
Dezzel joined Beatrix and Rila during their meeting with Rikik. However, eventually it became clear that he wasn't needed. Rila spoke with a Crepan leader in his language, and whenever she had a question, Beatrix had the answer. Dezzel eventually excused himself to train with Kernich. From what he gathered during his time at the meeting, the arena entertainment would continue with a few changes. The Creps had already proven that their race had the best swordsmen in the world for dueling, but humans have proven in the past that they could fight better with a partner than Creps could. There would still be one-on-one combat in the arena, but much of the focus would shift to teams of two facing each other. Rila advised that the Creps should continue to face Beatrix until they learned to resist Psyche, but that there also must be lessons given each day.
"You're the strongest psychic," Beatrix had told Rila away from Crepaneers before the meeting. "They should face you."
"Rikik explained to me that they want to beat you specifically. You have embarrassed many of them already. They want their chance for honor."
Before Dezzel had left, he'd asked, "Do I still have a role in the arena?
Or in any of this?"
While still relieved at the lifted burden, he wasn't sure he wanted to give up all responsibility in ending this war.
"Rikik tells me that you've proven you can beat any Crep, even those who've beaten Kernich," Rila said, "so it no longer seems right to have you face them in one-on-one combat if you're going to use Mylan. And there's little point for you to fight without it, as you will use it against our enemies. Therefore, you will fight two of them at a time from now on. It will assist in encouraging the Creps to work with one another, as they must learn to do it if they are going to live through any battle and earn the bastial steel weapons we have promised them."
Dezzel wanted to ask if the reward of bastial steel weapons was really a promise the Wind Knights could uphold. But Rikik was staring as if hanging on every word. He seemed to know enough common tongue to understand if Dezzel asked. Dezzel had left shortly after. Kernich would help him learn to fight in pairs and against two at once.
In fact, Dazzle was pleased to see that the warrior was already training with a group of wind knights. Two pairs were engaged in combat, Kurnitch watching as he panted, no doubt from a recent bout. At seeing only 10 of the wind knights here, Dazzle assumed that the other 40 or so were off taking care of everything else that needed to be done. He worried for a moment that he hadn't said anything to Rikik about housing for these new humans, but he trusted Rila to take care of it like everything else for now. Considering how little sleep she'd gotten, it was a miracle she wasn't in bed yet, like her daughter. Dazzle was eager to share the good news of the Wind Knight's arrival with Lyda, but he had training to do to have any hope of beating two crabs. Besides, it seemed better to wait for Adria to awaken so that she could sit with Dazzle when he contacted Lyda and say whatever she wanted to Lyda. Soon after he began training, he realized that there was something more important than learning to fend off two creps at once. He needed to know how to fight with a group of comrades. It was about 3 times as difficult to keep track of 3 people instead of only one. But with part of his mind in the other plane, he could feel their energies battling better than his eyes could watch them at all times. Unfortunately, it didn't help him much during training, for no one felt the same aggression they would in a true battle. There wasn't much for Dazzle to pick up on. Kurnitch designated himself as Dazzle's partner for now, both during training and whenever and wherever they would need to take up arms together. But there was more than just sword fighting that Dazzle had to learn. He still needed to find out how to resist Psyche consistently. Beatrix helped him and Kurnitch practice, along with a few 100 creps. They gathered in the arena later that day, Nebri joining them for translation and to practice as well.
"The pain caused by Psyche is as real as any pain," Beatrix told them. "The only difference is that it's caused by your mind, rather than an injury. Something you may not know is that we are all immune to Psyche while we are asleep. Even I wouldn't be able to pain any of you without waking you up first. This shows that our minds can exist in a state that is impenetrable. You have to practice putting your mind in that state. There are different methods to do this."
She paused to let Nebri finish translating. When he was done, however, many creps started speaking at once. It took a while for Nebri to quiet them all down.
"They have many questions," he said.
"Let's see if they still do after I'm done explaining."
There was patience in her voice. These creps reminded Dazzle of jumpy children, many even playing with the dirt with the claws on their feet. One tossed a clump of it at another's legs and laughed. The receiving crep spat back.
"The easier method to resisting Psyche is still difficult, but it's what I recommend practicing. Like I said before, you must feel something stronger than this terrible pain. However, some powerful emotions will lead your mind right back to the pain. For example, you will feel desperation for the pain to end, but this is too close to the psychic spell. Your mind cannot get far enough away from the pain if you focus on this desperation."
So that was one reason Dazzle had failed in the past.
"Instead, you must think of something very different than pain. It might be difficult to think of a crep you love, because then you might start to feel desperate to return to him or her. This will then remind you of the pain taking you away, leading to your death. Rather, I recommend a memory that brings you comfort and peace. If you can't find one, a fantasy can sometimes be strong enough to work. Think of whatever it is you want most, so long as you truly believe it might one day be in reach.
Lyda, to be safe.
Take some time now," Beatrix said. "Think of a memory or a fantasy, and I will walk around and cause minor pain to test it."
None of the creps had any questions by the time Nebri was done translating. Beatrix came to Dazzle and Kurnitch first.
"I don't think I want to know what you're going to think to resist the pain," she teased Kurnitch with a grin.
"You don't."
"What is the other method?" Dazzle asked.
He might have too much doubt in Lyda's rescue for it to be a strong enough fantasy.
"Very few people are able to use the other method." She cocked her head to the side. "Actually, you might be one of them."
"What do I need to do?"
"Make your mind unavailable. It sounds simple, but it's not. I've never been able to do it myself, but I did receive instruction on how to do it from my psyche teacher. It's a deep form of meditation where your mind leaves this world behind."
"Like goes to another plane?"
"That's why I think that might work.
Except Fathal can find me there."
"Then he might be the only psychic able to pain you still."
She tossed her hand.
"But this is all theory. We have to test it."
"Go ahead. I'm ready."
She squinted at him.
"You can fully move your mind to the other plane that easily now?"
"Yes, I'm ready," he repeated.
I'll start with the minor spell, Beatrix said. No, he said with confidence. Your full force. He left the physical plane behind. It was no longer an odd sensation to separate from his body, except when Beatrix started to pain it. He felt as though he had a twin, and his brother was sacrificing his own body to protect Dezel. It was all him. He was protecting himself, but that didn't change the way it felt. He was completely separate from the pain, though life still existed in his body. It had to, or his mind would die no matter which plane it was in. This realization made it easier to return to his body. Not fully, just enough to issue simple commands. Walk, run, jump. He supposed he could make it fight as well, but without his mind there, every action would be based on instinct. In some cases, this wouldn't be as bad as it sounded. But it would in most. He enjoyed watching Beatrice's face twist as she tried harder to hurt him. He smiled at her from his body, his mind still removed. He figured he should take this chance to at least greet Lyda and give her the good news about the Wind Knights. He would still talk to her later when Adria was available, but he didn't want to wait any longer. He called for her. A different voice answered.
I know that two of you have been speaking.
What do you want, Fatal? It was only morbid curiosity that kept Dezel in this plane, as fear was telling him to run.
Are the Wind Knights there yet?
Why do you want to know?
They are. Good.
Why is that good?
I don't want to keep Lyda here any longer. She's depressed to the point of considering suicide. Did she tell you?
Dezel didn't answer.
Then I'm surprised.
There isn't much we don't share.
I'm not surprised she told you. I'm surprised you still aren't considering bringing me the Akoral. Perhaps I underestimated you, Dezel. You have a stronger will than I realized. It must be hard for you to let her die.
Again, Dezel didn't reply, but only because he was too angry to do anything but curse.
Oh,
Patel said as if he realized something.
You think you will be able to keep the Akoral and let her live?
His energy reddened as his words brought forth anger.
I was right after all. You are a fool.
Do you have a point? Dezel replied with fury, arcs of orange radiating out from his energy cloud.
How are you planning to prevent Basin from taking the Akoral to me?
Dezel tried to leave, but something held him the same way a nightmare holds on until the worst possible point. He could feel it coming.
Don't fight me any longer, Fatal said. All of you will live if you simply cooperate. Let me go!
There was power behind Dezel's words, strength to his thrashing. He came into his body, into a storm of agony. He screamed as he fell, his muscles ripping apart. Beatrix let down her hand as she stopped the spell.
I'm sorry, Dezel. You were resisting completely, so I didn't think you would suddenly be vulnerable. I would have lessened the degree of pain if I knew.
Feeling as if he couldn't get enough air, he gasped as he pushed himself up with his hands.
I'm fine,
he said when he could, for he noticed the worried expressions of Beatrix and Kernich.
What happened?
Beatrix asked.
Fatal distracted me.
Dezel got up and stretched gingerly, his muscles sore.
Are you sure this pain is only in our mind? Why do you ask?
Because I still feel it when the spell is done.
Considering how much pain you feel, yet how quickly you recover, it must be in your mind. Nothing really hurting your body that badly would go away as quickly. There's great power behind our thoughts, though. We even have the capability to change a dire situation into one of hope just by altering the way we think.
She put her hand on his back.
I can feel that you're worried about whatever Fatal said to you, but everything is still the same. Don't let him get to you. Have hope.
I will, if I can make sure we finish everything we need to in time. I'd better find Rela.
Chapter 29 Dezel realized that to fulfill his plan, he would have to stay up during the nights and sleep sometime during the day. Given that he was required to show up at the arena in the morning and the afternoon, this made it difficult to find a stretch of time for deep sleep. It was even more difficult considering that every time he drifted off, he felt his mind going toward the other plane, where he knew he could speak with Lyda. Less than a day had passed since the Wind Knights had arrived. Dezel was kept busy with training, but he did manage to find time to visit Adria in her new temporary home. All of the Wind Knights had at least 4 walls and a roof now, where the 2 had privacy while he contacted Lyda.
Dezel put his mind between the planes, where he could listen to Lyda and Adria at the same time. It was a slow process to allow the two friends to speak to one another through him, but it was well worth the hours spent. At the beginning of it, Dezel couldn't speak in either plane without putting his mind fully there, but by the end he was comfortable enough with the transition to have a presence in both planes, able to communicate back and forth without leaving either. Adria spoke of battle, often referencing names of men and women who Dezel didn't know. There had been two large battles, one successful and one not. No one, not even her parents, told her how many people died on either side during each fight, but she saw enough deaths to know that it was in the hundreds both times, for both Kiro and Tenred.
"I'm glad you weren't there," Adria told Lyda. "But I would have given anything to be there instead of here. There's nothing here but floor and walls and darkness."
Adria didn't reply to this, so Dezel took the opportunity to say something.
"Patol shall give you better accommodations, Lyda. There's no reason not to, except if he wants to be cruel."
"There is another reason. He wants something from me that I'm not giving him."
"What does he want?"
"I'm not going to say it. I have no reason to let it out now, especially after I kept it from you for so long."
Dezel imagined every horrible thing he could.
"Lyda, it's worse if I don't know."
"Patol isn't Erwul, Dezel. You shouldn't worry about that."
"And I haven't even mentioned Erwul's reward yet. Not that I will unless it's to ensure she runs after we can't stop the war."
"I'm going to imagine it's worse than it is if you don't tell me," Dezel said.
Adria asked, "What are the two of you saying?" Dezel took the time to catch her up.
"Adria needs to know as well," Dezel told Lyda.
Her bright energy made a wave over the horizon, sprinkling down as Dezel felt her sigh.
"He's keeping me in here unless I can convince you to bring the Akarul. He promised to let me back into the other place when you agree to start your journey here."
"What's the other place?"
"A larger prison with many rooms, including a beautiful library with endless books. He served me true meals as delicious as your mother can make, and offered baths as well as a bed."
"You should tell him that I'm on my way."
"He'll know I'm lying."
"I really am, Lyda. I'm coming there with the Akarul now."
She didn't hesitate to call his bluff.
"I know you too well to believe that. I wouldn't want you to anyway. This is almost over, isn't it?"
"Yes. Give me a moment to catch Adria up."
When he was done, she said, "Tell Lyda I will kill Fatal for what he's put her through."
"I don't think she wants to hear that."
Adria thought for a moment.
"You're right."
"But I feel the same way," Dezel said.
He no longer was sickened by the idea of taking a life, so long as that life belonged to Miklin, Erwul, Alaphon, or Fatal. The elf was probably the most dangerous. His existence was a constant threat to any race besides elves. And he would kill Lyda if there was even one small flaw in Dezel's plan.
"Do you know where your father is now?" Dezel asked Lyda.
"He's with me in this prison."
"Do you know when he's coming here?"
"Fatal won't tell us, but I might know anyway. How late is it right now?"
"It's evening."
"I figure Fathol will send my father during the night to ensure he can teleport into the Crepan arena without being seen. You should have Creps watching the arena at all times. Or maybe not. Would they kill him for entering without permission? Nebri did say so the last time, didn't he?"
"Their respect for humans has risen since we've been here. I can't imagine they would kill your father. Many of them know him, and we would protect him."
"If you can keep him alive and imprison him so he can't take the Akarul, then I will be happy."
"Happy to die."
It reminded Dezel how delicate all of this was, especially now. The worry of failure was heavy, bringing wetness to his eyes. He blinked away the burgeoning tears, hoping Adria wouldn't notice.
"What is it?"
Adria asked.
"She's talking about death again," he said.
"Tell her to stop giving up and trust us,"
Adria said firmly.
"I can't. If she gets the impression that there's a trick involved, Fathol will find out. How much more time do you think your mother needs?"
"I have no idea,"
Dezel assured Lyda.
"Your father won't be killed, and he won't get the Akarul. I promise."
"Thank you. I know it must be difficult for you to promise that."
"It is. Do you have any idea if it's tonight or tomorrow that Fathol will force him to take a portal here?"
"Fathol would probably have some discussion with my father before sending him off, but the elf hasn't come here in quite a while. Does it matter if my father comes sooner rather than later?" "Wait, I'm not sure you should answer."
Dezel thought about his plan and figured out what he wanted Fathol to know.
"If there's anything you can do to keep Basin from arriving soon, it would be helpful. Give us 2 more days if you can."
"Dezel,
Pater will get this out of me.
I figured it's worth him knowing if there's any way of delaying your father.
Why? What do you have... Wait, do not answer that. I really hope there's nothing planned, Dezzel. Just keep the Ackerel, make sure my father stays alive, and I'm sure the rest of you can end the war with his help. My life is not worth the risk of losing that chance. Please tell Adria what I said. I've been in this plane too long, so I must rest. We will speak sometime later. Goodbye, Dezzel.
He longed to comfort her, to tell her she would live and they would end this war. But doing so might ruin their only chance of accomplishing it. Besides, her presence was already fading.
Goodbye.
He hardly suffered from the same fatigue as he used to, but the bitter feeling that Lyda's curt goodbye had given him was worse. He filled in Adria for the last bits of conversation between him and Lyda.
You did well, Adria told him.
And yet it feels like we're failing.
It's going to feel like that until we succeed. It always has for me, ever since we realized Lyda's family had gone off to Canaan.
But we've succeeded many times since then. You never felt anything but failure?
Only failure, she confirmed. Like the world is crumbling apart, and soon it will break completely.
She seemed stricken with worry, her eyes glistening. Dazzle knew the feeling of despair well, for he often felt it when speaking with Lyda. He'd suffered more in the last few months than in every painful moment of his life added together, but none of his dangerous fights or miserable treks compared to this hopeless feeling. He never thought Adria could feel this way too, but there was no mistaking her expression of terrible suffering.
"We've accomplished a lot so far," he said. "There have been swings of success between the failures. We found Lyda's family in Canaan. We figured out how to use the Ackerel to make an explosion. We obtained all the Ackerel we need. We've kept it safe and will continue to do so.
And your father died in the process." Dazzle was more shocked than saddened to see Adria shed a tear as she spoke those words.
"I had no idea it affected you this much."
"Every death does." She wiped away her tear, her face tightening to show her insult.
"Especially losing someone as close to you as your father."
More tears fell. She gave up, trying to wipe them, and covered her face instead.
"And so many of my friends have been killed. I started a list many times, but I could never get through it. Most of them are even younger than me."
Dezzel gave his shoulder for her to lean on as he put his arm around her. He didn't have any close friends to lose besides the people he had met since leaving his home. He thought about what it would be like if any of them died. Even losing one would devastate him. He couldn't imagine two perishing, and especially not three. The only reason he'd accepted that his father truly was dead was because he already had grieved that loss once before. The time they'd spent together, after he discovered Wade was still alive, was the greatest gift Dezzel could have asked for. Yes, Wade was taken away afterward in an explosion, but that just made their short journey together in Canaan even more precious.
"No one deals with death well," he told Adria, "but some of us have more practice than others. It took me a while to figure out that it was all right to feel everything I was feeling. It was all right to be vulnerable. It's the same for feeling scared about what we have to do. It's normal to feel this way. I'm terrified, Adria. I, too, feel like the world is crumbling apart and that it's up for us to stop it. Yet there's nothing else I'd rather be doing." She sat up and wiped her tears.
"I feel the same way." This was the second night that Dezzel guarded the Ackerel. He spent his time much like the first, grasping for that connection to the land he'd once felt in the arena, when he knew he could liquefy the entire ground there if he wanted. To achieve this, he needed the perfect balance between the planes, a state where his mind existed equally in both. Fatal knew how to do this, Dezzel was sure. It gave Fatal more power with Psyche than any other psychic. Perhaps he used this power to manipulate the elves. Dezzel wished he had some way of proving it, even to himself. But it was just a theory. Basin had not shown up last night, but it seemed unlikely for him to wait another day, because Fatal didn't need to wait another day. Basin would come soon. With the help of Kreps, the Wind Knights had melted the Ackerel and reshaped it into squares that were long and thin. When the catapult was ready, they would be stacked on top of each other to make symmetrical walls. The cluster of apple vines would be launched by the catapult between these walls of Ackerel, which would have tremendous amounts of bastial energy stored in them. The apple vines would suck the bastial energy out of the Ackerel walls to become a volatile flying ball of death. It should explode when it struck something, as it had at the Marrow's home in Canaan. The force of the blast should be enough to knock down any castle, wall, or even part of a mountain.
It would create chunks of bastial steel, which could be used to make swords for the Kreps who proved themselves in the arena, the same Kreps who would fight alongside Dezel's party and the Wind Knights in the upcoming battle. Dezel still didn't know who their opponents would be, when the battle would occur, or where. But there would be a fight against other people, or elves at some time in the near future, because one or both races were not going to allow the Wind Knights to use the threat of this weapon to end the war and free Lyda. The Akril was kept in a shed not too far from the arena. They wanted Basin to find it, after all. Fathol had control over him, but that should change tonight. After a few hours of standing outside the shed, Dezel heard someone coming toward him from the side. He turned too late to defend himself as a cloaked man wrapped his forearm around Dezel's neck.
"Wait, Basin, don't do this!"
But Dezel couldn't speak with his air restricted. Basin had a tight hold, using his other hand to keep his arm in place as Dezel tried to pry it off.
"Don't fight it," Basin said. "I'm not going to kill you."
But Dezel thrashed in hopes of freeing himself. When it didn't work, he tried to elbow Basin, but couldn't get the angle he needed. Dezel softened the ground so that both of them sunk into it waist deep, but Basin kept hold. There was no reason to bury both of them completely, so Dezel fought back with his strength instead. He bent forward in hopes of picking Basin off the ground and throwing him over his shoulder, but Dezel had made a grave mistake putting them in the ground. The dirt allowed Basin to stay on his feet easier.
"You're going to be fine," Basin promised.
Dezel realized it was over. He tried to relax, noticing a stink, as if Basin hadn't had a chance to bathe in quite some time. Everything started to fade. All that was left was the stench of the man who was once a headmaster. But soon that faded, too. When Dezel came to, his head was too heavy to make sense of what had happened. He saw sights and heard sounds, but nothing registered until the cloaked man looked at him and Dezel recognized the burden in Basin's dark eyes.
"I'm sorry, Dezel. He's going to kill Lyda if I don't do this."
Dezel's mouth felt hampered by something. His wits still hadn't returned, so he tried to speak through the gag. He didn't even know what he was trying to say. Nothing came out, anyway. He noticed that Basin had tied him to a chair. The two of them were inside the shed. Before coming here, Basin had either broken the lock or taken the key from Rela's pocket while she slept. If he'd broken the lock, someone would have heard. But to take the key from Rela's pocket meant he had to have figured out it was there. Dezel tried to speak again. He needed to ask Basin more than a few things, as Basin hurried to place the thin squares of Akril into a large sack. He'd removed the bastial energy stored from all the metal except one square. It glowed only dimly, providing just enough light for the small shed.
"If I take out your gag, do you swear not to scream?" Basin asked.
Dezel nodded. Basin untied the cloth. Dezel spat out the clump of fabric.
"You must have come here last night," Dezel surmised. "You spied until you figured out where we're keeping the Akril and the key." "Yes. There are enough humans here for the Kreps not to wonder about me. I just had to keep my distance and especially stay away from those who know me." "We can get Lyda out together. You know where she's being kept. You just have to show me, and I can get past any wall. I've done it plenty of times already."
Basin stopped loading the squares of Akril to glance at Dezel. The sack was already on a wagon. Basin would soon pull it out of here, head back to the arena, and take a portal to the elven village.
"We can't sneak past psychics to get to her," he told Dezel. "You did that to get inside this shed. I had to get past one sleeping psychic. There will be thousands of elves stopping us from getting to Lyda, and that's if they don't see us take a portal into the center of their territory. They're expecting my return. There's nothing else we can do, Dezel. The only option is giving Fathol the Akril."
"You would give up everything that you and the rest of us have worked toward to get this Akril here?"
"She's my daughter,"
Basin snapped. He put up his hand to silence Dezel as he listened for anyone who might have heard. Then Basin went back to loading the Akril as quietly as he could.
"I understand that," Dezel said, "but it doesn't change what I said. I figured you would understand. I know the two of you have been speaking. I know how much she cares about you." "It's reciprocated, isn't it?"
Dezel nodded.
"I don't blame you for choosing to keep the Akril," Basin continued. "I realize the decision must have been difficult."
"We thought you wanted us to keep it."
"I did. But I also thought that we could stand against Fathol and that he wouldn't kill my daughter because he would fear our retaliation. But he won. He convinced me of the truth. There will be no retaliation for any crimes against me or my family.
We're too far removed from Kiro now. Traitors. At least stay long enough to plan with me.
Plan what?
Layson asked. What we will do after we give the Akral to Fatal.
You and everyone else will stay here. I will give the Akral to him and take care of my daughter.
And then what? Layson gave no answer. Dezel asked, Did Lyda tell you what Adria has said about the war? Do you know how many have died and will continue to perish?
I know. We can put an end to it. We just need the Akral.
If you must give it to Fatal to save Lyda, at least tell me how you plan to get it back afterward.
Fatal has gone too far this time. He has made himself an enemy. We're ready for orders.
Dezel paused until he could make sure he really meant his next words.
We're ready for battle. Dezel, I'm going to have to tell Fatal everything we speak about. There are no plans to get the Akral back. There never will be. You have to let it go. There will certainly be no battle.
What do you expect the rest of us to do after you take it? Dezel replied angrily. Layson finished loading the last of the Akral and closed the sack.
I can't stay here and discuss that with you any longer. It's up to the rest of you what you want to do now, not me.
We're ready for orders, Headmaster, Dezel repeated as Layson started to retie the gag around the back of his head.
We're ready for battle.
Layson finished putting the gag in. The corner of Basin's mouth quivered as he looked down at Dezel.
I'm sorry,
he said as a tear fell down his cheek.
I never should have gotten you involved. I never should have gotten anyone involved.
Basin opened the door to the shed, then looked around carefully. He pushed the cart out, then came back to close the door.
Tell them I'm sorry, he said.
They left Dezel in the empty shed. There had been light and warmth in here, but now it was cold and dark.
Chapter 30 There were many curiosities that went through Lyda's mind as she waited to find out if she would live or die. What would have happened if she'd never left the academy to look for her family, or if her father had never found Dezel at Lake Cavell? She would have fought in the war, beside Erwell eventually. She might have died in battle, but at least there was honour in that. Her name would be inscribed upon the wall at Redfield in the academy, like so many others whose deaths had served to keep the walls standing. If she didn't die in battle, she was certain Erwell would find some way of making her life miserable. It wasn't on purpose. It was because he felt he deserved her, like she was an object he had purchased and someone else had taken her from him. She could tell by his looks of betrayal after she'd said she wanted nothing to do with him. She might have been better off staying at the academy, but what would have become of her mother and father? They probably would have been picked up by Maros, and Dezel wouldn't have been there to climb up and fetch them from the high cave. Dezel would have done that for anyone. When asked why, he'd given the simple reason that it was because he could. She met a lot of students at the academy, mostly other mages like herself. They were more competitive than she was, but that might have been because she was usually the best at manipulating bastial energy. Her father was in the same position when he was a student. Most people knew this. They also knew that she was born at the academy and had lived there her whole life, her father teaching her from a young age how to manipulate energy. Some mages resented her for this advantage. She couldn't imagine Dezel resenting anyone for something like this. It was clear when they'd met that he longed to train at the academy, but he'd never shown any jealousy toward her or Adria. Lyda was sure she'd never met anyone near her age who cared more about helping people than Dezel did. She never realized until now how much of a comfort it was to spend time with him. She'd become used to such comfort while growing up with her parents, two people who'd dedicated their lives to making the world better for others. But she'd never felt it from any of her friends. She remembered putting her head on Dezel's shoulder during their trek through Caenuan. She didn't know what it was at the time that had drawn her toward him, but she had nothing but time now to dwell on all her thoughts and memories. It was probably the only thing clear to her anymore. He made her feel that there were endless possibilities in a world where she'd only known one path previously. She was supposed to train to be a mage, then find work or end up as an instructor. But then she'd met Dezel, and her opinion of herself had changed. However, now she really was only an object, no better than what Erwell saw her to be. Fatal used her value to her father to get what he wanted. If it didn't work, he would discard her, for she was of no use to him. She was beginning to believe that she was of no use to anyone. She wondered how the elf would kill her. A knife to the heart seemed like something he'd choose. Would he do it himself? Would he have her father watch? Or would Fatal present her body to him later?
What would he do with her father afterward? Basin would be too dangerous to be let go, for he would gather any loyal men and women he could to exact revenge. More would die. Perhaps she could convince him of this before she was executed, make him promise not to strive for revenge. Dazzle had given her hope again that she might live. The days had been easier for her since then, not that she knew exactly how many had passed. She wondered what she looked like now, having gone so long without a bath. She never regretted what she did to get herself thrown in here. If she hadn't interrupted Fatal's portal maker, then Fatal would have brought a small army back through the portal to quickly kill Dazzle before he could get away with the Ackerel. He would probably be dead by now, along with Beatrix and Kernich, and the Ackerel would be with Fatal. Lyda and her father would be free, but why would that matter? Her father couldn't return to Kiro to fight, because Alaphon would imprison or kill him for openly going against the crown. Lyda might be able to swear an oath to fight, never to see her father again. She would be with her mother and Adria, and the few friends left who hadn't perished. It wasn't much of a life to lead, knowing that they'd failed, and that Dazzle, Beatrix, and Kernich were dead, while her father was exiled or hanged. When the same thoughts weren't cycling through Lyda's mind, she was practicing gathering bastial energy, or visiting the other plane. Some of the Master Mage instructors she'd had over the years had actually given her the advice to find a secluded place where no one would interrupt her, and then train for days until she ran out of food or water. Lyda's control over bastial energy had improved during this time, proving it had been good advice, but all her efforts would be for nothing if she died. Rila's half-brother, Vithos, no longer brought food to Lyda or her father. Fathal probably no longer trusted Vithos to stay loyal. If Vithos saw how miserable they were, he might risk everything to free them. She had hoped he would come to do so, and she could tell Dazzle that she and her father were out. It was too late now. Her father had already left to fetch the Ackerel. She shouldn't have lied to Dazzle and Adria about her father still being here. He had left many hours before she'd spoken to Dazzle. It was the last cowardly thing she would do before she died. Fatal had told her he would cut out her eyes if she revealed that Basin had already left, and she believed the elf would do it. She should have yelled at him to do it before her father left. Perhaps she could have angered Fatal into killing her, so her father would have no reason to take the Ackerel, but she was scared of death, and of losing her eyes. Elwell had said she was a coward. He was right. She'd almost fled from the first and only battle she was in against Tenred. She still had stomach-turning memories from that fight, of shooting down a woman in the trees. Kernich had chopped off her head. The amount of blood that had sprayed out didn't seem to be real, as if it were part of a play with intentions to horrify the audience. Lyda could still feel the pain in her back from the man who had slashed his sword across her flesh, but she thought about all the agony and misery of the rest of the people who'd taken blows during this war. Then she thought about all who had died. The suffering that they and their loved ones felt was immeasurably greater than the cost of Lyda's life. She wasn't sure how she could even go on if her father did trade her life for the Ackerel. How would she ever get past the guilt? She couldn't. Especially if Fatal used the weapon to kill more humans, as she was sure he would eventually. Someone unlocked the door. It always startled her, the snap of the bolt and the loud creak of the door. Light ambushed her eyes. She felt like a creature as she lifted her hands up to protect herself from it. She shouldn't have been able to tell who it was, except somehow she knew it was Fatal, with terrible news.
"Your father has returned with Yakorel,"
he pulled her up by her arm. She kept her hands in front of her eyes in a poor attempt to block the light. She would never get used to it if she didn't open her eyes at least a little. The pain was intense, but she forced herself anyway. She figured this feeling was akin to getting used to her new life a little at a time. She wished to speak to Dazzle, but that would have to wait depending on what she saw here. She saw nothing at first as the light blinded her. Eventually she realized that it wasn't daylight, but bastial energy from mage wands. Many of the mages surrounded Fatal as he pulled Lyda along with him. It was still night out. Her father must have returned. A good sign. If he'd been here for hours already, then it meant Fatal had something planned besides releasing them. He still could decide not to. Despite everything wrong with the situation, Lyda still cherished each breath of fresh air. It almost felt like there was endless space around her after being confined for so long.
"How long was I in there?" she asked Fatal.
"You don't want to know."
"I do."
"You don't."
Perhaps he was right.
This whole thing was easier to swallow the less she knew. Given what little she could do now, what point was there to trouble herself with the details of her capture or the taking of the Ackerel? She hoped her father hadn't hurt anyone, but knowing would only make it worse.
"I left my boots in the prison," Lyda realized.
She liked the feeling of the grass between her toes, but she would need her boots eventually.
"They will be brought to you along with the rest of your belongings."
She still didn't believe she would be released. The feeling that she'd remain here forever was a tenacious one, only trumped by the fearful thought that she would die here. It had taken so much out of her to accept either outcome. There were about 20 elves surrounding her in Fathol. That left many more who were either elsewhere or were sleeping in the elven homes around her. She wondered how many of them were involved in any of this. It was strange to think that only a small portion had anything to do with Fathol, for the way he spoke about the elves was as if they were one entity. Another group of 20 were gathered at a small field of grass that was barely familiar to Lyda any longer. This was where she'd taken a portal into the elven territory, where she'd also delayed Fathol's portal maker from taking a small army back to Goldrum to kill Dezel and the others so the elves could take the Ackerel. This was where she'd either leave this place for good or die. The elves parted to make way for Fathol, giving sight to Basin as he stood beside a wagon with a large sack spilling over the edges. Fathol let go of Lyda to inspect the sack. She and her father embraced each other. She felt weak in his arms, unfit for whatever journey was ahead of them now.
"You shouldn't have done it," she told him.
It was the last thing he needed to hear, but she needed to say it anyway.
"I had chosen to die."
"Please don't say those words,"
he whispered with a shaky voice.
"I can't hear them now, or ever."
"But you know it's true."
"I do, but I still had to do something." "Well done, Basin,"
Fathol said with a level of joy Lyda had never heard from him before.
"You always find a way to get something done when you need to. I found that out when we first met, and I knew it would benefit us both one day." "How does it benefit us both today? Isn't it obvious?"
Fathol turned up his hands.
"Because you and your daughter are finally leaving."
Basin approached Fathol.
"Then we'll use some of your Ackerel to make a portal now. You must wait for your belongings. They are being brought here."
Fathol grinned.
"Or you can stay and have a bath and a meal. I recommend both for the two of you, especially the bath. I can smell you from here, Basin."
The elves chuckled.
"I'm not trying to insult you," Fathol added. "I only want us to part on good terms. Who knows when we might see each other again?"
"We're leaving now," Basin demanded.
"Father, I have no shoes," Lyda told him.
He looked down and grumbled low enough for only her ears.
"We'll make you new ones. We must leave. Answer a few questions for me while you wait,"
Fathol said. He glanced at Basin with sudden hostility.
"Where were they keeping the Ackerel?"
"In a locked shed a half mile from the arena."
"How did you find it?"
"I spied on them for a day. I watched them put it there. Rila Polkan locked it and put the key in her pocket, so I figured she would keep the key on her at all times. I was right." Lyda started to ask, "Did you—" but she stopped herself. She didn't want to know if he'd hurt Rila.
"Was the shed guarded?"
Fathol asked.
"Yes,"
Basin answered.
"By who?"
"Dessel Fogg." He looked at Lyda.
"Everyone is all right?"
She wasn't sure she believed him.
"But then, how did you get the key from Rila to get past Dessel?" she asked.
"That is a good question," Fathol said. "Ah, your belongings."
Two elves tossed their bags on the ground. One set down Lyda's boots.
"Get them on,"
Basin said.
"We're leaving." "You will answer my questions first,"
Fathol said.
"Why? I already gave you the Ackerel." "Because I need to make sure there were no tricks. I know how you humans like them."
"There were no tricks," Basin said. "They didn't let me take the Ackerel freely. I stole the key from Rila's pocket while she was sleeping, and I attacked Dessel by surprise. I put his head in an arm lock until he passed out, then I tied him to a chair and gagged him as I put the Ackerel in that sack."
"Dessel just let you do this to him?"
Fathol asked.
"He fought. He even tried softening the ground and flipping me over. But there's no way out of the hold I used on him. I could show you if you'd like." "Drop the aggression, Basin. You know these questions are mandatory. You don't have to act like I'm putting you through unnecessary misery. You and your daughter should think about how worse all of this could have been. You're leaving healthy with everything intact. I can't say the same would happen to me if I was captured by humans who wanted the Ackerel I'd taken." Just tell me when you will let us leave.
Soon!
Fathal turned, and waited for his elves to take out all the squares of Acheril. They set them apart from each other on the grass.
How do I know this is Acheril and not silver? The metal is not glowing.
All were glowing when I found them.
I drew out the energy so I wouldn't be caught with a glowing bag.
You should have left one glowing.
That would put me at risk of being caught.
Isn't your psyche strong enough to know I'm telling the truth? All were glowing.
Athol held his chin as he stared at her father.
Do you know of anything else this could be, beside Acheril?
No.
Think about it first.
Basin tossed his hand petulantly, though he did seem to pause to think.
Nothing else glows beside Acheril metal and Caerjalo flowers, which stop glowing soon after they've been picked. I can't think of any way this metal could have glowed without it being Acheril.
Fathal held Basin in his gaze for a moment before turning away. He crouched over one of the squares of metal and spoke in Elvish to those around him. One of the elves turned a small bag over on the grass, dumping out a glowing chunk of Acheril. With a wave of his hand, he took the bastial energy out and let it go free in a shooting upward beam. All the elves alternated between placing their hands over the chunk of what everyone knew to be Acheril and the recently obtained squares of metal. Lyda figured these must be expert mages, feeling for the pull of bastial energy. Just being a few paces away made her too far to pick up on something so difficult to detect. She couldn't decide whether she hoped it really was the Acheril, or if her father had been tricked into bringing something else here. If he was tricked, she and her father would probably die tonight. It was the better outcome, though something impossible to hope for. She'd always figured that her father was prepared to die for this mission, but his worry made it clear just how desperately he needed this metal to be Acheril. Lyda knew what it meant. She was his weakness now. She hated it, but there was nothing she could do to change that. Her father would do anything to keep her alive. She should appreciate it, but it felt like a curse. She should love him for it, but instead she felt anger for what he'd done. Fathal rose from his crouch and looked regretful as he approached.
There is some pull on each of the sheets of metal. It is Acheril, but...
He sighed and looked back at it. He straightened out again and put his hand over his mouth.
But it's no stronger than the small piece of Acheril we used for comparison.
As far as you can tell, Basin said, I have more control over bastial energy than any of your mages, and even I can't pick up the subtle differences between large and small pieces of Acheril. I've tried. It draws bastial energy in slowly, whether it's big or small. But the bigger it is, the more it holds.
Have you seen Acheril in this state before, Basin?
Athol gestured at it on the ground.
No, because I have not either. There is no way to know if melting it into this shape has changed its properties in any way. Perhaps the wind knights ruined it.
If they did, it would have been by accident.
No,
Fathal said.
If they didn't know what they were doing, they wouldn't have reshaped it all at once. They would have reshaped a small portion of the Acheril first. Yet they couldn't have had time to do that, since they arrived at the Crepan colony and you went and took it. If this really is the Acheril, then they reshaped it all at once. Why would they do that?
Because they must have someone with them who knows about this type of thing better than you or I do.
He or she has probably tested Acheril in more ways than you can think of. They don't have time to make tests that they don't need to make. Their men and women are dying in this war.
Fathal stared at the Acheril for a long while.
We honor our agreements, Basin said.
It's the only reason we're all still alive. Now we had an agreement that I would bring you the Acheril and you would set us free. It's there, so it's time for us to go. Fine. You can walk away right now.
Lyda was too surprised to move. Apparently her father was as well, but after a few breaths, he took her hand and set a quick pace south.
But wouldn't you rather wait a day for the Acheril to charge?
Fathal called after them.
Come on, Basin said to Lyda, before he changes his mind.
I'm serious,
Fathal called.
I will allow you to leave through a portal if you just wait.
Father, Lyda said, the jungle of Meriek is dangerous.
Not as dangerous as staying one more day here with them. Do you really wish to leave on these terms, Basin Hilla? No handshake? Perhaps a threat?
Fathal chuckled.
At least give me something.
Basin shouted over his shoulder.
If I could make every goodbye last forever, I would do so just to never see you again.
Fathal applauded.
I knew I could rely on you.
Then he put up his hands.
Wait, at least let me give you a sword for your trip.
Basin didn't stop until Lyda planted her feet.
We at least need that, she said.
He had an angry scowl as he looked back, but his shoulders eased a bit as Lithos came toward them. The elf had his head down, glancing up like a frightened puppy. He carried a sword of elvish design, long and thin, with a slight curve to it.
Basin,
Vitos said when he was close.
Basin put out his hand.
Just give me the sword? I'm sorry. I wanted to do more,
Vitos said, still not offering the sword.
I don't want to hear anything you have to say. Just give me the sword. My sister is all right,
Vitos asked nervously.
Rila's fine. And Adria?
Yes, give me the sword, Vitos.
Give it to him and come back here, Fatal called.
Vitos ignored him.
There is talk of great battle between humans, do you know?
I know nothing of the war,
Basin replied.
I do, Lyda answered. There will be a great battle soon, and Kiro is likely to lose.
Basin looked horrified. It was the very reason she hadn't told him, but now there was a purpose. Vitos stood straight and looked Basin in the eyes.
I will come with you.
Isn't your wife with child? Basin asked.
The elf's head slumped.
The unborn baby died. My wife and me fight many times. We no longer together. My right task is with my family, my blood. I fight with the people who fought with me, not the elves. Humans. My fight is with them. Humans save me from Kreps. They give me home. You lead me, Headmaster. You will again.
I'm in no position to do that anymore, Vitos.
Vitos!
Fathol screamed, then continued to shout in Elvish.
You will be again, Headmaster. You are the best leader. Come, we fight for Kiro now.
And what if the elves arrive with a weapon capable of destroying cities? What will you do then?
I no longer make same mistake. No longer confused.
Vitos finally handed the sword to Basin.
I will fight them with you, Headmaster.
The three of them marched away from Fathol. Lyda expected Vitos to look back and say something, but he never turned around. Neither did her father. She seemed to be the only one who couldn't resist one last look at Fathol's face. Illuminated by the light of his mages around him, he stared back in disbelief.
Chapter 31 Dezel waited in the dark shed after Basin left. He made light and looked at the rope that bound his legs to the chair. No wonder it felt soft. It wasn't rope, but cloth. The same material must be around Dezel's wrists, behind the chair. Dezel had a sore neck from the chokehold Basin put him into, but it was probably the gentlest way Lyda's father could have subdued him. He'd given the fight everything he had, and still Basin was able to subdue him. It would be a constant reminder that there were certain situations where loss was inevitable. Dezel would have to avoid those in the future. He had thus far, but everything was coming to a head. There was even less room for error now. He struggled for a little while, but he made no progress in freeing himself. He supposed he could squirm and pull harder, or try to break the chair somehow, but he chose to be patient instead. Eventually, the door opened. Adria walked in.
Bastial hell, did he hurt you?
No. Adria started to untie the cloth around Dezel's wrists.
But you did fight back, I hope?
I did, with everything I had.
Good.
She grumbled a curse.
These are too tight, I'll cut them.
Don't. We should have plenty of time now, and we could probably trade the cloth for coin. I'm sure you can untie them eventually.
She stepped in front of Dezel and put her hands on his knees to lean over him.
Are you sure he didn't realize that we planned all of this?
I'm sure. He couldn't stop telling me how sorry he was.
And you were convincing?
I was. She straightened her back and returned to untie the cloth holding Dezel's wrists.
So he and Lyda should be free soon.
Only if Fathol really believes Basin took all of the Acheral. There's no way to know what's happening there now. We could have missed something that would allow Fathol to figure out the truth.
Maybe you and I could have missed something,
Adria conceded.
But with the Wind Knights unsuccessful in poking holes in your plan, there's no way we all could have missed something.
Fathol still might not release them out of suspicion, Dezel said. All he has to do is keep Basin and Lyda there for a couple of days as the Acheral charges. When it's fully charged, it could be obvious that it's not as powerful as it should be. He'll probably figure out exactly what we did.
There's no reason for him to keep Basin and Lyda, even if he is suspicious. We've already proven that we won't give up the Ackerel for them, so they aren't of value to him. I doubt Basin would even come here again after finding out we tricked him the first time. He and Lyda would accept whatever fate Fatal chose for them, knowing that killing them would do no good. The elf would have to release them eventually. We talked about this, Dezel. We also agreed that what we gave them might glow enough for Fatal to continue to be tricked even days later.
I know, but it doesn't sit right with me.
You're usually sure of yourself to the point of annoying me. She finished untying his wrists.
Well, I've been less so since Fatal became involved. Dezel and Adria worked silently to free his legs. He stood when they were done.
I like it better when you're confident, Adria told him.
You just said that annoyed.
I know, but that was before I knew you. Now I wish to hear confident answers from you. You haven't given one yet as to how we're supposed to get Lyda and her father here.
Because Fatal can listen to anything I tell Lyda. There's no way I can inform her that we fused a thin layer of Ackerel to blocks of silver. He'll find out.
Don't you think he's going to find out anyway when the power of the Ackerel is not sufficient? You just said he could.
Yes, and I still don't know what he's going to do when that happens.
We've already talked about this for hours. You've gone through many options with me, but I want you to come up with a plan.
What about your mother?
The only thing she knows about this other plane is that you somehow use it to speak to Lyda. You need to figure out what to do next. It should be something that brings Lyda and Basin here no matter where they are now, where they're going, or what Fatal decides to do.
That might be impossible.
Dezel, she chided.
All right, I will.
Waiting had always been difficult for Dezel. He'd waited for something to happen for a whole year after his father supposedly died, wondering if he'd spend the rest of his life serving food and drinks to the people who came to his mother's tavern. He'd faced plenty of other challenges since spotting Lyda's father by the lake that night, but waiting wasn't one of them anymore. Not until recently, when Dezel had waited for the Wind Knights to arrive. Not knowing when they would come was the hardest thing to endure. But waiting for Lyda now was even more difficult. He knew that she and her father must be suffering. They thought they'd taken away the Ackerel from people they cared about. Being marked a traitor of Kira was probably cutting, but this pain, to think that all their friends hated them, must feel as sharp as knives in their hearts. Dezel needed to tell Lyda that everything was fine. They still had more than enough Ackerel to match what the Maros had stuck to the mountain walls. He could risk speaking to her through the other plane, but Fatal could listen without Dezel detecting his presence. So to be safe, Dezel would wait to contact Lyda while she and her father continued to suffer. Where would they go during this time if they were free? Dezel considered that, and much more in the following days, when he wasn't training beside Kernich and Adria. She was right that he needed a plan. Dezel felt Lyda calling to him several times. He'd rather feel another fully powered spell of pain from Beatrix than suffer through the agony of ignoring Lyda. Eventually he convinced himself that Fatal would be suspicious if Dezel didn't at least listen to what Lyda had to say. His heart raced as he realized he would hear her in a moment.
"Are you all right?" Dezel asked when he broke through to the other plane.
"Thank the stars you answered."
She still appeared to be far north, past the horizon of energy.
"Are you still with Fatal?"
"No, he released us."
"Good. Can you tell if he's listening?"
It wouldn't matter. Dezel would act as if he was, but perhaps he could continue to trick Fatal this way.
"I don't think he is, but I can't be sure. I'm so sorry."
"It's not your fault."
"I'm sorry for my father, then. He shouldn't have taken it."
"It's worth it if the two of you are alive," Dezel said.
Her energy pulsed.
"It isn't. Many more will die."
"We can't be sure of that."
"The war isn't going to end without another battle. Adria said Hawthorne will attack the Academy with everything he has. Many will die."
Dezel didn't see how he could argue against that, so he didn't.
"I want to see you."
"Even after everything that's happened?"
"Even more so because of everything that's happened. I want to see your father as well. We're still with the Kreps as we figure out what to do next."
"You should take back the Ackerel."
Fatal's voice came from the sky above Dezel. It was too soft for him to make out any words. After a few moments, Lyda told Dezel,
"We shouldn't speak."
"At least tell me where you and your father are going."
"Away from here."
"Can you make a portal?"
"We have no Ackerel."
"Do you have horses?"
"No."
They needed help.
But what could Dezel do?
"Fatal, why didn't you offer them a portal? You have plenty of Ackerel."
Dezel felt the elf's presence, suddenly, somewhere near Lyda, past the horizon.
"I did.
Payson didn't take it because he wanted to leave right away.
He probably knows better than I do whether it would have been dangerous to stay.
No, you know the answer to that even better than I do.
Dazzle felt a chill as he realized what question was